Awesome. Is that a good tip? Does that work for you guys?
It's perfect. Perfect tip. What are we going to correct you on a tip about running? Come on. Have you looked at our times? All right. Ultrarunning.com. They are a great company that makes great footwear that makes us better runners, Don.
You open up the box of that your shoes come in. And you look at the underneath of that lid, and it shows you how to run. Proper running gait. Gait's important to Ultra.
It is.
We're bringing on, we have Jason Schlarb on the other end of the line, and we're going to talk a little bit about a tip he has, something that he uses to keep him in the right zone, in the right space as he is running the long miles. Jason, welcome back to the performance tip here from Ultra. You've been on once before. We're happy to have you back.
Hey, it's always great to talk with you guys, man. You're always super fun and entertaining, so I always look forward to it.
Evidently, you don't listen to our podcast. I'm joking.
He's talking about the 5 minutes.
Yes, I do.
Oh, the 5 minutes he spends with this is engaging.
Yeah.
What were you thinking, Scott?
That's about all I can handle is about 5 minutes.
you could find Jason at Schlar Blog, S-C-H-L-A-R Blog, where he's got all kinds of great stuff. He does some coaching. He talks about his races there. He's running all over the world as well and running in a pair of Ultras, no doubt. And when you're running in those Ultras, what are you thinking about? And share that tip with us, Jason.
Yeah, you know, the best is when you don't have to think at all. And you've got it all figured out, but it takes a long time to get there, and I know I'm not there quite yet. But one tip that I have that I find really helps me when I get a little bit tired, or it's a really long run or it's a long race, and my form might be starting to degrade a little bit, is to focus on getting my elbows back. I think that really helps my form. It kind of translates to good form the rest of my body. It kind of just, you know, gets my momentum going and kind of gets my legs driving forward as well when I do that elbow back. I know when I get fatigued, I can start to kind of, swing back and forth a little bit, which doesn't help things out and makes running a little bit slower.
I got to excuse this comment, and we'll edit it out because it's probably improper, but I picture you doing the chicken dance as you're running down the trail. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah. Sorry.
Scott, we've never edited, but we may.
This may be a first.
I think it's pretty humorous, and, you know, it's when you get really tired and beat down, everybody looks pretty damn funny. So I don't think you have to edit that at all.
How often do you check into your gait? How often do you think about it? Do you think about it just when you're starting to fatigue, or do you try to stay on top of it throughout your race? How many times do you check in?
You know, I tend to check in at random times. Sometimes I use it almost to distract myself if I'm in the race in particular or doing a really hard workout. I think about, okay, let's get my mind off of the challenge that I'm tackling at the moment and think about how I can get faster, more efficient, quicker, get to the finish line or get to the end of the workout a little bit easier. The other place that I really think about it too is I incorporate some general mobility, and that general mobility, I work on a lot of those different techniques and steps that you'll see on the other side of the shoebox. Driving the knees forward, forward lean, all those different kind of things that kind of accentuate them with a little general mobility drill. And I think that kind of keeps me fresh, keeps my my form from degrading too much with a lot of miles during the week or a long season. That's it's a second tip. I'm cheating a little bit, but
two for one. We're adding value.
Great. I'm glad to help.
So as an ultra athlete, you can probably choose from any of the lineup of shoes that you would like. Do you have more than one shoe that you use, or have you found your shoe and you stick with it and you don't take any of the models, just a single model?
For a while when I first started to run with Ultra, I pretty much exclusively wore the Peridon. I'm an oversized maximalist kind of runner. I really enjoy the benefits of that. But since the Superior 2's come out, I've really appreciated that good lightweight traction kind of shoe. Mm-hmm. And then when I do some speed work, particularly in the winter and the spring, I jumped into the 1 squared, or the 1.25 now, I guess, and used that because they're so fast, so light. It just feels great when I'm trying to do some fast running on the road or something.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that 1.25. I have actually never seen that shoe, but I've heard it's an amazing shoe. Is that a trail shoe or more something out on the road?
You know, it's a funny question because I mean, there's a lot of guys that myself included feel like there's a lot of, especially back in the day, there's used to run in road shoes on the trails for all trails for speed stuff, whatever. I know that Josh, in particular, has used the one for some ultras. I know you know, a couple other guys do as well. It's got the cutout, you know, exposed EVA that it grips pretty well. You know, unless it's really snowy or muddy, I think it suffices plenty well. But yeah, that guy, I would compare it kind of to almost like a Nike Free. It's very flexible, very light. The mesh on top's very breathable and thin, and yeah, it's good. But you know, you can jump it as long as the trails are fairly dry. I think the one is a great option there too.
Okay, well, you know, one of the things that Altra offers on their website, if you go to their website to buy their shoes, they offer free shipping, and they have a 30-day guarantee.
Nice, and you know, have you noticed? And I sent that link over to you, Scott, that they have a very cool shoe fitting app on there. So you can put in the kind of shoe that you presently wear, and it may not be an Altra at all, and what size you wear, and it will show you a comparative a model that compares within the Altra lineup. And I think that is just an amazing, amazing tool that's out there.
That's really good.
Yeah, so yeah. Check that out. And check out jasonschlarb.com, JasonSchlarb.com, and go check out his blog, go check out his coaching, and hear about his races, and look at some cool and inspiring pictures on there. He has a story about running across the Big Island of Hawaii. So if you're at work and you want to do something productive, check out that blog and do some reading, and then go to ultrarunning.com and check out, get some squares, get some superiors.
2.5.
2.5.
The new version is 2.5.
Of course. Hey, thank you so much, Jason. Appreciate you coming on.
You bet. It's always a pleasure. You guys have a great, great day.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Hey, Jimmy, so do we really have a topic of some kind?
Yeah, we do.
What's the topic?
Last minute mental and physical preparation for a 100-mile race.
Last minute. Okay, so let's...
What type of mental and emotional prep?
Save it for the podcast. Okay.
Let me frame it this way, guys.
Wait, don't frame it. We don't like framing before the podcast.
I'm recording anyway.
You should know that by now. So we're organic. We like the organic sprouting of the idea. I'm in the farming industry, and so we like that analogy.
I'm going to stick with the construction industry and go with the framing. And I'm going to say we're more like a grass hut where you just kind of start piling on.
Isn't that the one that the wolf blew over?
Yeah. That's kind of our podcast. Very, very threatened by high winds. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I am Scott War.
And I am the long-lost Southern California correspondent, Jimmy Dean Freeman.
I feel like an Oreo. I feel like the white stuffing between two Freemans.
That's good. Did you think of that on the way over? Or just
yeah,
come
I've
to
been
you?
Working on it for a
There's
week.
There's a lot of people that would like to be the white stuffing between two Freemans, just not me and Don.
Touche, sir. I don't know exactly how that word fits in there, but I think that's what you're supposed to say when you don't have anything else to say. Hey, Jimmy, so we've got a podcast going with you, and I think that the amount of preparation that we have, it was a text that says, hey, let's do a podcast. So here we are.
And that's about all the preparation we've done.
Jimmy, you're getting ready for
at least that's what we're going to tell you.
You guys are further ahead of the game than I am. in this particular regard.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
I'm in survival mode over here.
That's perfect. Let me do a little framing here, because as we say we're not prepared, I actually do have our text here that I'm going to...
While he's finding that, Jimmy, I think Jimmy just left the room.
We don't blame him.
Hey, Jimmy, I was just about to ask you a question. All of a sudden, I look at the monitor and you're gone.
Yeah, I still heard the question that you didn't ask.
What have you been up to? What we haven't talked to you forever.
Yeah.
Are you training? What's coming up?
I'm closing in on month number 5 of fatherhood.
That'll keep you busy. That's good cross training.
Yeah, in that I have a highly unusual work schedule where I coach early mornings, late nights, and weekends, and do a little of online consulting. I have had the great challenge and pleasure of being a stay-at-home dad for the last 2 months since Kate went back to work in April. And Bardot, our, you know, almost 5-month-old baby girl, has been remarkable and challenging and amazing. And it's I have a tremendous amount of respect for all of the moms out there. And in the meantime, I, you know, have tried to keep some semblance of training going. And in some ways, I'm stronger than I've ever been. And in other ways, I feel a little bit underprepared, in that a week from tomorrow, I'll be taking on my first 100-miler of 2015, the San Diego Endurance Run.
What a great course that is. Plenty of climbing on that, and beautiful views, and a well-run race.
Yeah, Scott Mills and Angela Chartel put on a pretty well-supported event, and the Coyotes have been aid station support there a couple of years, and I've both crewed and paced, I don't know, 4 or 5 times down there. So it'll be interesting, because it's a new course as of last year, based on a fire that happened 2 summers ago. So it's really a race that I know exceptionally well, and a race that I don't know at all. So it should be quite an adventure.
Before we dig deep into this well-crafted and prepared podcast that we have, Jimmy, what is it that I saw of Kate Martini, your beautiful bride, doing some stand-up comedy? What is she doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you need to send the right link. There's a link to that they videotaped her.
Oh, really?
Doing it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work on my computer. I need a new link. So send that link to us, and we'll attach it to the podcast description.
Yeah.
She's definitely got a good sense of humor being with you.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, she's got to have a really dark, self-deprecating sense to decide that I'm a good life partner. But I decided really early that I needed to find someone young enough to not understand how bad of a choice I was. So I met Kate when she was 19, and the rest is history. You know, I did stand up for 7 or 8 years as kind of a glorified hobby. And I probably had somewhere around 100 shows.
Wow.
And so Kate's had a lot of exposure to stand-up, but never any desire to do it. And even as a running coach, she's, you know, given pep talks and pre-run speeches, you know, in front of 150, 200 people at a time, and has been coaching for, you know, 10 years. So when a friend of a friend reached out and said she was producing a show that was a full lineup of working stand-up comics that was going to be highlighted by a sacrificed virgin at the end, a professional man or woman who had never done stand-up before. I was pretty floored when Kate said, yeah, I think I want to do this. So it was one of those things where, you know, since her injury 1.5 years ago, it's really been all about the baby and the pregnancy once she got through that initial round of physical therapy. And because running hasn't been going very well for her, she's wanted to take on a different challenge, and this fit the bill. So she prepped for it for a couple of months and wrote a whole stand-up set and went and saw a couple of shows and met with the girl who produced the show and worked on it and did 8 minutes of comedy and got a lot of laughter. And now she has more comedy online on YouTube than I ever did. So my 8 minute set never made it to the internet, and it's probably better.
Well, with all the podcasts that you've done with us, there's got to be at least a good 2 minutes of comedy in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're being generous. I think I've got about 12 seconds of laughter in there somewhere. So, no, Kate did great, and it was almost a 90-person theater. It sold out. A lot of her family and friends were there, including my dad and stepmom were here from Northern California, and my brother came, and Kate's aunt and two of her cousins came. So it was a well-supported event, and Kate had a great time and says she probably will never do it again, but she said long ago she'd never do it. So who knows?
Do you think that's something like a long run, a marathon or something that you do and you go, I'm never doing it again, and then you find yourself back on Ultra Sign Up and looking for another race?
You know, it's similar in the sense that you can have two different people do it and one person walk away thinking it was a challenging rush and wanting to do it as soon as possible, and another person going, I enjoyed that experience and I'm never doing that again. So, people do marathons or 100-mile races and they're one and done, and other people take it up. But there's a lot more people doing 100-mile races than there are people doing stand-up comedy, which is pretty remarkable because there are a lot more professional stand-up comics than there are professional ultra runners. Hmm.
So you're saying the chance of being a professional in comedy is much greater than
I am
running.
Saying that exactly. Wow. I've got a lot more experience and skill running 100-mile races, but I've never been paid to run one. The closest I've gotten is having my expenses covered, which happened all of one time and then never, ever, ever again. But I've been paid to do stand-up and traveled a little bit to do it. So that's sort of the genesis of me getting into keynote speaking. I have a lot more to say on sort of a living an inspired life side than I do on getting you to laugh side. So tried to transition from one thing to the next.
Hey, Jimmy, what kind of comedy did you do when you were up there? Did you talk about observation stuff, what personal life stories? What would we hear if we went and saw Jimmy Dean Freeman live on stage?
Anecdotal storytelling comic with a observational twist. I talked about growing up in a household of all women and what kind of life that was. There was a bit I did called Estrogenification Camp. I did some animal impressions, and that was one of my closers. People,
Skype pretty much censored you there.
It did. And you know, it was probably better that way. Let's move on to more interesting topics.
Wait.
You're not gonna let that go, Scott?
Before we move on, I need hear an animal impression. Give me your best.
It's got to be the coyote.
The animal impressions were not a vocal thing. It was actually a physical act out. So you're going to have to be in person to see my ostrich impression or my monkey impression.
Okay. Well, maybe that's something when we see you next time. We'll do a little YouTube clip and get that on our YouTube channel.
I'm quite positive that will never happen.
But any listeners, if you see Jimmy, feel free. Regardless if he's in a restaurant or a place of business, just ask him to see that ostrich impression. I think that would be appropriate. So we sent over a little text, and it said, "What's the topic?" And here it is. This is where we'll all spin from this text. So you signed up for the race, and life sidetracked you, and you seem to have lost your mojo and your focus. Now what? Race day is coming up. And to somewhat back to the beginning frame this, there are times that we need to sign up for a race. For instance, December, there's a lottery, and it doesn't race until the end of June. A lot of things can happen between December and June. And all the motivation and excitement and in your desire to run this race, and all of a sudden, bam, you know, it something else happens, and June's coming. What are you going to do? So that's where we're going to leap from and talk about Jimmy. We have him on video. He's doing his ostrich impression.
it is quite impressive.
Yeah. And
is that your head you're putting in the sand there?
And he's back. That's good.
That's how I avoid all of my problems in life. I stick my head in the sand.
So, Jimmy, so now this kind of relates to you a bit because this is what we talked about. You said, I've been busy, and I have a race in 11 days.
Well, I want to backtrack just a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Jimmy Dean Freeman did an amazing feat last year where he ran the original six 100-milers, which took an extreme amount of focus of prioritization to do that. Okay, so he finishes that, calms down, has a baby, signs up for another 100-miler, right? Piece of cake, San Diego. It's just a 100-miler. I did six of them last year.
In his backyard.
Where are you now? Where's your head? Where's your training?
Training has not been very consistent over the last 5 or 6 weeks. Last week I had a 7-day period where I got one workout in, which amounted to about an hour and 15 minutes, if that. And really, I'm not super concerned about the physical side of it. There's a hilarious irony in that I actually have more volume of training under me at this point this year than at this point last year, going into the 600 milers.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, there's been a lot less familial adversity. You know, going into last year, right when I sort of discovered I was going to take it on, Kate broke her leg. And then there was 3 intensive months of taking care of her, helping her convalesce. And then right as Kate came out of the fog and got her cast off and was able to drive again, my mom broke her back and put a hold on everything again. So last year was a cornucopia of physical like injuries in my, you know, immediate family. And that prevented any dedicated, serious or consistent training. Now, it's not that I've done a tremendous amount more than I did last year, but it's definitely a higher volume by, you know, 10, 15 miles a week. And I've probably averaged 55, 60 miles a week since mid-November. And so there's been some good consistency there. It's just sort of fallen off the shelf lately as I've lacked focus and motivation. And I like to train with something, a big purpose in mind, a big goal. And last year was such an off-the-chart goal for me. I had never run more than 2 100-mile races in a year. And taking on 6 of them in 13 weeks was terrifying. So I'm going into San Diego this year, which has been on my bucket list for a long time.
Have you never run it, Jimmy?
I've never run it.
Really?
I've supported it. Last year was the first year I wasn't at San Diego since like 2010 because I was running the Old Dominion 100 on the same weekend to kick off the original 600 challenge. So I'm going to San Diego. I have 2 very good luck charms in the race. Andy Kumeda, who ran the original 600 challenge last year, is going to be at San Diego. And my favorite friendly rival, a good buddy of mine, Mike Shimone, he is also running San Diego. And so I have a couple of people to know that when those 2 guys are in the race, I usually do really well. And then on the other side of it, I don't have a really strong drive or motivation to finish. And it's probably the first time, this is my 20th 100-mile race. It's probably the first time in 20 that I've gone into it with sort of this mental malaise. I haven't done my requisite sauna training to get ready for prospective heat. I haven't practiced anything that would really help me sharpen my race focus other than the Lake Sonoma 50 miler, which, you know, was back in mid-April. So this there's a part of me that's really masochistic, both physically and psychologically. And the idea that I'm going into it and I need to really stay present in a totally different way. Normally it's don't get overwhelmed by the distance. You have a big goal, but you can't take the goal down all at once. And now it's like, ignore the fact that you don't want to run 100 miles. See if you can just run a mile at a time and pile them up. I think my biggest concern is, you know, as our friend Ash Runs 100s always like to say, you got to have a strong why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And I kind of want to see if I can finish a 100-mile race. Not only that, but do well without a why at all. Just get out there and practice staying present in the moment. And, you know, this past week, Dave Mackey had a terrible accident and broke his leg and is going through a few surgeries. And just the idea that we're able to do this, that I'm, you know, sound body, insane mind. I'm going to go out there and kind of treat this race as an expression of the joy of the sport and the freedom to be able to do something like this. But there's definitely a hole in my mental game.
Hey, Jimmy, I'm going to take the other side here and say it sounds to me like you just found your why.
Yeah.
Not with Dave Mackey and being able to do it, because that's a why as well. You know, just celebrating some health and the options. That's a huge why. But it sounds like you realize you need a why. You know how important that is, that you've decided that next why is, I'm going to see if I can do it without a why.
The why is the absence of the why?
The why is the absence of a why.
That's pretty zen.
I'm gonna make a logo out of that somehow. But the I think
I'm gonna practice why not.
but that's gonna substitute the big reason. Can I go in here and just take what I have and move through? Am I able to manage this vehicle of mine through this 100 miles without this big reason, you know, and the goal and the focus that you usually have?
Well, that begs me to ask the question. You know that some point, at least once during that race, you're going to go, you know what? I'm done.
This is stupid.
I
should be doing other things.
Why am I even here? And when you have a why, that's when you pull it out of your pocket and you go, well, this is the reason why I'm here. This is what I'm doing. If you don't have a why, what are you going to pull out of your pocket, Jimmy?
What's in your pocket, Jimmy?
Well, I don't have pockets in my running shorts, so that's going to be a problem. I honestly don't know what I'm going to look at when I think back to Angeles Crest last year, which was the fourth race of the six. And at mile 16, mile 75, I was facing mild adversity. And I didn't have anything majorly going wrong physically, as far as legs, muscles, gastrointestinal distress. I was having trouble breathing at mile 60. And then at 75, I did something stupid and threw up a bunch. And I remember thinking I like had this big, you know, six race goal to continue. And there was a part of me that just wasn't going to. I was ready to quit at 60 and 75 last year. And I really can't even point to that as having been this really strong drive. I'm still not sure how I got through the Angeles Crest 100 last year. I saw Andy Kameda at 75 and it was kind of like at that point I didn't want to let Andy down. And at 60, you know, I didn't think I was going to be able to recover from having some fluid in my lungs. So it just sort of like decided I wasn't going to keep going. Now that all of those factors are gone, I really honestly, Scotty, part of the reason I'm going into this is because I want to see who I'll be in the face of not having a solidified reason. Will I get to my first adversity at, you know, the mile 27 checkpoint and go, meh, let's go get beers? Or, you know, will I be like, let's just see if I can get to the next aid station? let's see if I can get to the next aid station. Will I play the game? I'm not someone, I really don't want to jinx myself by saying this, but I'm going to say it for the sake of the nation. I'm not someone who's traditionally had the difficulty of fighting cutoffs. I'm usually, you know, on the, I say front of the mid pack or back of the front pack. Very, very far back of the front pack. But, you know, I have a handful of top 10 finishes and I have more sub 24s than not. It's going to be interesting. I there's a part of me that kind of wants to go for this exploration. Like, what is this going to teach me about my mental, you know, fortitude? It'll be the longest period of time I'll be without seeing Bardot in her life. It's going to be strange.
So let me ask you this, Jimmy. You do some coaching. And you have a few of your athletes that come to you with the exact same problem.
That's what I was going to ask.
Well, you were going to ask that, Scott?
I was.
All right. Finish the question.
You know, they come to you and say, the motivation's not there. I don't have a why. I'm signed up this. I paid $250 for an entry fee, and I put in all this training. I have the base. I'm physically capable of doing it. I just don't know what to do, Jimmy. What do I do, coach?
Don't do it.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
Wait, give me your bib. Is that how you got six races in last year, Jimmy?
Give me your bib. Pizza. Go get some pizza.
No, I mean, I treat each one of these conversations uniquely because the people that come to me are all very unique individuals. And honestly, this conversation hasn't happened a lot between me and runners I'm coaching, because if a runner is motivated to hire a coach, they're usually pretty driven to be doing what they're doing. People who don't have a strong drive. So even runners that I have coached, when they don't have a race that's really important to them, or when they don't have a strong drive to do a race that they've already signed up for, they often don't sign up for coaching again.
That's a good point.
Or they take a season off. So this isn't a very common scenario.
Let's say,
and I'm going through my mental Rolodex. I don't even remember having an athlete say that to me coming up on a big race that's they've defined as the signature race of their season.
Well, let's back off of let's take the money out of it. How about a friend that you've been running with, or someone that you know that you've seen have lost the mojo? How do you get that mojo back?
Well, there's a couple of different ways that I recommend that people go about that. And the first way is time off, rest and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I with the distinct lack of downtime in the lives of new parents, I can understand why my focus isn't there. I have something else that I got to focus on and be really present to all the time now. And it's an awesome shift and it's an awesome transition. And I fully expected my running and racing specifically to take a bit of a back seat, which it has. This will only be my second race this year, and I've got nothing else on the books after this. So,
do you miss that, Jimmy? Do you miss the race calendar full?
No, I believe that, you know, you find passion in an activity that you invest in. And right now, my passion, my greatest passion, is being a dad. And Bardot is absolutely rocking my world, and I'm having so much fun. I never in a million years imagined or dreamed of having a daughter. And now that I have a daughter, I can't imagine it any other way. It's just freaking awesome. It hasn't made running any less vital. I'm someone, as you guys know, who has dealt with depression on and off in my life, to the point that I was even institutionalized for clinical depression and suicidal tendencies. And when I go 3 or 4 days in a row without working out, without running, I am a different human being, both chemically and physically. And I had a real dark spell the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I didn't get consistent workouts in, consistent runs in, even an hour, can completely change my outlook. And I broke the spell. You know, I ran Thursday a week and a half ago, or 8 days ago, and then I didn't get a workout in again until Tuesday night. And I literally went to a group fitness class at 8:15 p.m., and it was brutally difficult. And 8:15 to 9:15, you know, was catharsis. And I felt like myself again at 9:30 at night on Tuesday. And I went out for a run on Wednesday, and I went out for a run yesterday, and I feel back on track in terms of clear-headed and, you know, excited for the day. But so running has to be there for me in order for me to function and have some semblance of sanity in my regular life. Racing is not vital, but the two things that I get out of racing are the community of ultra runners and trail ultra runners is one of the most enriching, deep, profoundly generous communities I've ever been a part of in any pursuit, not just athletic. So I'm excited to go to San Diego to see, you know, all of the other people that are going to be there. You know, a few other friends are in the race. Elon Lieber is going to be racing. And there's people that, you know, I'm going to get to share conversations with out on the trails that I haven't caught up with for a while. And this is my first 100-mile race as a father. And there are people that I, you know, there's an awareness that was lacking as a non-parent that now I look at people in the community with a completely different, you know, viewpoint. And so I'm excited to catch up with people and spend some time on the trails, and I'm excited for the course that I don't know and sort of the unexpected surprises that the race will have both geographically and weather-wise. So there's a lot of things I'm looking forward to. The idea of piling up 100 miles in a consecutive effort is a little bit terrifying.
I just found your solution, Jimmy.
What's that?
All those people that are running San Diego 100 next weekend,
yeah,
in just over 7 days,
mm-hmm,
when you see Jimmy out on the trail, ask him about being a dad, and then just keep running. and you'll finish 100 miles because he's going to keep talking about it. That's your why right there. You're just going to keep on talking. Before you know it, you're going to be at the finish line, Jimmy.
Jimmy, I'm going to put you back on the trail and then pull you back a few podcasts ago, your podcast here on TRN, about the time that you were talking about your imagination and finding motivation to finish a run. And I recall something about space aliens on the trail with you. am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, my UFO sighting at the Oil Creek 100 in 2009.
Yeah, it might have just been a Petzl head torch is what he probably saw. I think that's just when they were testing the now.
They were doing some product testing out in the desert.
Yeah, and so...
strangely, it was 4 Petzl nows mounted to a drone.
It could have been.
Call it what you want, Jimmy. But I think you're going to summons some motivation somewhere on that trail. You're going to pull some things out. You're going to reach back to the 600 miles in 13 weeks. You're going to look back to your very first 100 mile, and you're going to find reasons. And whether it's Bordeaux, and whether it's the next hill, whatever it might be, you're going to come up with something.
You have plenty of time to think about it.
At least 20 hours.
Yeah, it's a 30-something hour cutoff, and based on studying the finishers list last year and my experience with the trails down in San Diego and the conditions, I was thinking I could be somewhere in the 20-hour range, but my sort of B goal was to be under 24 hours. So it'll be interesting because I'm not going to back off of my performance goals.
Hey, Jimmy. I'm putting on my doctor's hat a little bit here. Is the
what kind of doctor?
Psychologist?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know what you were going to be.
I don't know anything about
a proctologist.
I don't know anything about bones. A proctologist.
I don't know. That's the first thing that came to my mind when I looked at you.
So here's the doctor question I have for you. So was the last 5 or 6 weeks of inability to train like you had wanted to, is that because of lack of motivation, or is that a lack or a problem with scheduling and busyness of life?
I would say both. It's a bit of a chicken and egg conversation. But I had no less of a problem scheduling in the weeks before that, but found a way to get it in. So I would say maybe the motivation, sort of the lack of motivation, highlighted the difficulty in scheduling.
Do you ever worry about, and this goes to the table, not just to you, Jimmy, do you ever concern yourself or worry about losing that spark? Like, you have the spark now and you're running, but what if I lose this? What if I just never want to run again? And I don't want that to happen to me. And I'm figuring it could, because nothing is forever. I just don't look forward to that day.
I lose it every year.
You do?
Yeah. I schedule time off every year. I generally take a 4 to 6 week period off after every racing season. And then, you know, with a week or two off after big races like 100-mile races, with the exception of last summer, you know, in a 12-month period, I probably have somewhere between 6 and 12 weeks of downtime. So one of the ways that I determine how long my time off at the end of my season is I don't start to ramp training back up until I'm excited to train again. Mm-hmm. And
that's good.
After the original 600 challenge, I took 8 weeks off. And so we're talking the first weekend of September was the Wasatch 100. I didn't start running with any regularity again. I mean, I ran once or twice a week, you know, 4 to 6 miles. So we're talking like I probably averaged 10 to 15 miles a week between early September and early November. And then in November, I started ramping up real slowly and, you know, 25 mile weeks and then 35 mile weeks until I got up to about 60, 65 mile weeks. And then it was like a 40 mile week, a 60 mile week, a 40 mile week, a 60, kind of back and forth. So, yeah, I mean, I hit the wall in terms of my motivation every year. And then I take time off until I get it back. And in that time off, I focus on other things that I'm passionate about. And one of the things that I'm really focused on right now is baseball. I'm a huge San Francisco Giants fan, so I've been watching a tremendous amount of early season baseball, which is unusual for me. And then tonight and this weekend, I'm going to the College World Series regional. UCLA is ranked number one in the country, and I'm going to go see their four-team double elimination tournament tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. So I'm definitely not forcing myself to train. When I don't feel like training, I don't. And
Jimmy, you say you've taken the time off until you get that mojo back. It's always, I mean, not the mojo, the desire to get out and run. It's always come back, though.
It always has, yeah.
Okay.
I remember we were speaking with somebody, I can't remember, so we have a few hours logged on the podcast, and the person that we were speaking to said, hey, you're going to take that time off regardless. It's either going to be poor training or it's going to be an injury, so you might as well select when it is instead of it selecting it for you.
Yeah.
I think that's a good lesson.
Well, yeah, and then the other bit is if you keep training and don't take the physical time off, you're going to be injured, and that's going to be time off too.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, you framed the question. I want to know your answer to your question.
What was the question?
I can't remember.
Well, then my answer was absolutely yes.
The table question. Oh, have you ever lost the mojo, the desire to run?
Oh, in the middle of a race I have. So here's my question for you, Jimmy. That Maybe we train too much. I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think we train too much for some of these hundreds? And I ask you specifically because I've observed last year that you ran 6 100-mile runs, but you went into them what you claimed to be undertrained. You wanted to make sure that the miles that you put on in the first few races were really some training miles for what was ahead and what was to come. You realized that in 13 weeks, 600 miles could take a toll, and you didn't want to come in on the edge slightly close to overtraining. So with that said, do you think that as collectively as a group, we log too many miles and take our body closer to the edge than they should be to enter these races?
Yeah, 100%. I think that that's the biggest problem in ultra running, especially with people training for 100-mile races, is with Strava and social media and people looking at these elites who are training anywhere between 140 and 200-plus miles a week, that people get this idea that they, too, should be training that much. And there's also a mentality of, if I train more, I will be elite. And it's just a matter of work ethic. If I train for, 20 miles a day, then I can run like Rob Krar. And that's...
I think there's a little bit of talent there that... There's
two pieces to this, right? The first piece is you are genetically predisposed or not towards being an elite competitor. And then the second piece of it is... does your body have a predisposition to break down in high volume? And then sort of 2A is, even if you can sustain high volume, is high volume the thing that's going to derive the most performance out of your body? So I've always been a quality over quantity guy. And the more, I'm 10 years now in ultra running, and I do less high volume, and I do more consistency. So, I used to try and get up over 90, 100 miles a week a handful of times in a training cycle. And now, I look at a month and I'm probably doing about the same amount of mileage in a month. If I have a peak month, I think I might average, 60 miles a week for a month, which is, let's say, for the sake of this discussion, a 250-mile month. Before, I might have done 250-mile weeks, 100-mile week, and then been totally destroyed and like grinded out 30 miles in a week. And now that I'm just doing it more consistently and more balanced, it's my body's responding to it a little bit better. And, I've trained a lot of people, and I've put together training programs for people that followed them to the T, and I've put training programs together for people that sort of threw my caution to not run a ton of back-to-backs. And, I watch their social media updates and I watch their Strava, and I see 35-mile run here and 25-mile run the next day, and the following weekend, 30-mile run one day and a 32-mile run the next day. And I've watched the performance and the results. And, every person is different. There are no broad sweeping strokes that cover every athlete in every situation. But I would say that at least 80% of the people that I've seen preparing for these races are doing too much.
Yeah, I think I wanted to pose that question too, because in the beginning of this podcast, you sounded confident that the training that you have done is going to prepare you, get you through this race. You never said, I don't think I've trained enough. I don't know if I'm physically capable. You knew what you had, you've done is sufficient. You trust in your body.
Yeah, and the other thing that people lose sight of is people look at training programs, training cycles like an island, and they go, okay, well, I've done this amount of training for this race, and the race that I did really good at, I did 70% more training. So there's no way I can do as good at this race as that race. But the thing that people lose sight of is running builds off of the foundation you've already built. So the training I did a year ago was training for this year. And the 6 100s was training for this year. So even if I, even though I did more training this year than last year, that doesn't mean that I'm more prepared. And conversely, if you have a training program that doesn't go as well, it doesn't mean that you're less apt to be successful. And 100 miles, very specifically, the biggest factor is always how you manage race day, because you can throw away your best fitness by eating poorly or running, you know, out of your zone. And vice versa, you can, you know, survive, you know, not your best fitness by really executing on race day and having a good calorie plan and a good pacing plan and staying within yourself. So,
you know, I want to interject real quick. I think that's a really good point, Jimmy. You have experience of running 20 100-mile races and six in the last 12 months. Your execution, the way that you execute your race, is dialed. So, I mean, you have a good base. You have your plan in place. Really, the only variable here is upstairs in your head.
Yeah,
and
I'm gonna watch a lot of my favorite mental game movies in the next week.
What are those? I know Rocky 2 is one, right?
Rocky 4 actually.
Which
training montage in Russia is.
Yeah. Sorry,
right. Classic.
It's twice as good as Rocky 2. That's why it's 4.
what other montages? What other movies?
I've got a lot of boxing movies in the mix for some reason, because I feel like 100-mile racing is like going 12 rounds with a heavyweight and getting your butt kicked. Cinderella Man is up there. I really like Without Limits, which is one of the Prefontaine films. Chariots of Fire. Rudy.
Love Rudy.
Is that a dog or something?
No.
I don't know.
It's a football player.
Oh, okay. I'm
Notre
sorry.
Dame.
Oh, I don't see a lot of movies.
No, you don't.
I'm sheltered. Hey, what about, we talked about motivation and what can you do for motivation. And I know what always pumps me up is going out to a race and just seeing people with bibs on and coming through aid stations. If that doesn't get your spark or your mojo.
Is there a race around your area tomorrow, Jimmy, that you can go volunteer at?
I'll be coaching tomorrow and Sunday. The Coyotes have training out at Malibu Creek, so no, that won't be an option.
Can you have them put on bibs, even though they're training?
I could.
And take a cowbell with you?
Unfortunately, the only bibs I have available to me right now are infant feeding bibs. So we'll just have everybody put a baby bib around their neck and
with a Sharpie,
call it a base number.
Put a number on there.
Jimmy, you need to do that. You need to put Bardot and start using some of your old race bibs and making those her bibs. I think that would be classic for a running family.
And disgusting. all of my original six Hundo bibs are actually above my computer here at my desk, and none of them have been washed and smell just delightful.
You don't want to wash them.
Look and feel worn.
That's not right.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorite films is The Last Samurai, and I'm going to watch the scene where Captain Aldridge gets knocked to his feet by a bamboo sword over and over and over again. Just remind myself that I just got to keep getting back up.
I don't think I've seen that one. I got to see that one.
It's a football movie. Hey, so Jimmy, as you look into this race, why don't you take us through your mind of how you're going to break this 100 miles up? As you're going in, feeling for those of us that maybe entering a race, not feeling that we've put all of our fitness miles in that we would like to, but feeling sure and strong in our mind that we can do it. How are you going to now break this race down?
I am going to do a little bit of disassociation, which is to say I'm going to focus on things other than running at times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to probably utilize some music and get some songs that I really like listening to and enjoy the scenery of San Diego, of that mountain range, and Lake Cuyamaca and the surrounding areas. I'm going to enjoy some trail time with both friends that I know and friends that I'm soon to meet. Going to share some conversations on the trails with, you know, whoever I happen to be around at that moment. And then at the times that I need to focus in on what I'm doing, it's really going to be an aid station to aid station mentality. I'm just going to break the race up into a smaller chunk and focus on what there is to do in between the two checkpoints. And it shortens the race up a little bit. You know, you're never going for more than a 4 to 8 mile run. And, you know, I can always get my mind wrapped around a 4 to 8 mile run.
You know, I've gone through where you've either been a racer on a race, and keep in mind, you know, you're racing yourself in the clock and all that, not a upfront racer, not that anybody for a second thought that I was, but go from a racer to an efficient traveler, you know, taking on a race of just saying, okay, it's X number of miles. I'm going to go run that thing, and I'm going to become efficient at my hills, my downhills, and see how I can preserve my body and keep it healthy and keep on top of it. How long can I sustain that? And that's a great challenge and a lot of fun to just try to stay on top of everything and traveling efficiently, keeping your heart rate, keeping in the zone, keeping the hills not so they're taking things out of you, but just a different part of the course. So it's not bad to go in and just be an efficient traveler too. And you could probably finish pretty fast as an efficient traveler with caps on efficient, by the way. So, Jimmy, I look forward to hearing what happens in San Diego, certainly.
Who's crewing and who's pacing you, Jimmy?
I have two great buddies pacing, David Villalobos and Billy Yang.
Hmm.
And another one of my coyotes and a friend from many bad waters ago, Tamara Aaron, is going to be crewing me. And y'all get to see Kate and Bardot at the finish line, if not at the starting line and the finish line.
Do I understand that you're going to be up at Western States here doing a little crewing or something for Billy Yang? Is he?
Yeah, Billy and I are flip-flopping that role. So he's crewing and pacing me at San Diego, and 3 weeks later I'll be crewing and pacing him at States.
Good. Well, there'll be a chance for some payback then. Don't be too hard on him.
Oh, I don't think I'll be too hard on Billy. It's his first Western States. He'll be hard enough on himself.
Yeah,
I'll be there to help him keep moving forward.
Well, we have 7 days, 16 hours, 44 minutes, and 58 seconds until the start of the San Diego 100. We wish you luck. We have full confidence in you. If you're looking for a why, hopefully the nation will reach out and give you some reasons.
I am certain that through Jimmy's imagination with space aliens, running to rescue Bardot as she may be in, you know, in some space where he needs to come and rescue, he'll get to that next aid station. He'll find ways. He's very creative in his mind.
Hold that thought one sec.
You know, being a dad isn't easy.
You know what?
He is away from up and away, back and forth.
I was going to say, he says that he hasn't gotten a lot of training in the last 5 or 6 weeks. I've seen him run about a half a mile during this podcast back and forth.
Since we have him on Skype and we have him on video, we can see that there are times that the only two on the conversation are Scott and I, and we're looking at an empty
room.
Uh-huh. There's Bardot. What a sweet-looking Freeman.
Say hi, Bardot.
She doesn't talk yet.
Can you do a screenshot of that? We'll put it as the screenshot.
I can screenshot that. Oh my! Oh, you know, if you don't think there's pictures of Jimmy Dean out there somewhere?
Say hi, Bardo. Say hi.
All right, hey Jimmy Dean. We're wishing you the very best at San Diego 100 to all the people that are running out there. Remember, Jimmy, put that performance enhancing Cocopelli. Face it forward, the direction it needs to travel. Need to face to help you travel efficiently, and he's got it right there. Now that's beautiful.
Gentlemen, I also wanted to say thank you guys so much for the amazing Victory Sport bag. I will definitely be using at the San Diego 100.
Good deal.
Yeah, well,
it's the coolest drop bag. We bought a couple of Victory Sport bags right when they came out, and Victor, man, he's done some great work, and this new bag looks to be even cooler than the first one that I bought. So really excited about that.
Yeah, he's got some waterproofing stuff on it and all kinds of cool pockets to store your gear.
And when you're not racing it, it's a pretty good diaper bag too.
I think that's going to be my new diaper bag after that. We'll have to tell him that there's a much huger market for his
for
bag
babies.
Expertise.
Yeah, Victor, if you're listening
Victory
to this.
Victory baby bags.
Yeah, Victory baby bags, because there's more babies than there are racers.
There are. Every person on the planet has a mom. It's a much bigger market.
So go out and Victory bag. Okay, wait, let's start over. So go out and run.
Moss.
With a reason. Moss. All right, good thing I'm editing this.
Yeah, right. You don't even know where the cut button is, do you?